date is the 11th of July 2015, and my name is Clara Cook. I'm interviewing Jeffrey Golden as part of the LSE Oral History Project, and we're in the music room of the Shaw Library. Jeffrey, please can you tell me your name and date of birth?
My name is Jeffrey Golden, and I was born on the 22nd of May 1950.
When did you first come to LSE?
I first came to LSE for the academic year 1970 to 1971.
And what were you studying then?
I was doing the general course. My studies principally focused on international relations department subjects.
Can you explain to me what exactly the general course was?
The general course was a student's dream. It was an opportunity to sample from the much wider menu the courses of greatest interest. It was a one-year program. At the time that I did it, it seemed to have particular appeal to students from abroad, many doing, in the case of American students, their so-called junior year abroad. It was a one-year program which didn't lead to a degree, but the student became a full-time student at the school with the other undergraduates who were here.
And had you studied before coming to LSE?
Yes, it was my third year. I had spent 2 years as an undergraduate in the United States. Went back and finished my undergraduate degree in the United States, but then returned to the school for 3 years as a graduate student.
And what did you study when you were a graduate student?
I was a PhD student, and my research student with a very specific thesis topic. My topic was the politics of judicial appointments at the International Court of Justice.
What were your first impressions of LSE and the campus?
Well, I have to confess to being a measure to a measure of disappointment when I first arrived at the school. I had spent my first two undergraduate years at a campus university in the United States, where they took you to the top of the chapel and they said, as far as you can see and in every direction, we own all that land. So yes, I was a little disappointed when it turned out that an institution with the international reputation of the London School of Economics was housed in three buildings in an alley, and you took your life in your hands when you tried to cross the street, which was then a taxi shortcut that ran through those buildings.
Was that Houghton Street?
That was Houghton Street, yep.
It's all pedestrianized now. What was your impression like of the other students that you studied with?
It was a mind-stretching experience to be put in a group of students. The home students, if you'd call them that, the British students, were already culturally different from many of the students that I had studied with in the United States, but everybody couldn't help but be struck by how international the London School of Economics was. So for the home students and for me, it was also an opportunity to have your thinking stretched by students from a variety of backgrounds. In fact, I remember that the Times, the newspaper The Times, when I first arrived, used to advertise itself in the underground with big posters, but black background and a single line of text, and one of them said, "Great minds think unalike," and that struck me. I remember that because there again, I was surrounded by a number of great minds who came from very different backgrounds, and we didn't always come to the issues in the same direction. We didn't always think alike.
Did you get involved in any student societies or student social activities while you were here?
Well, one of the great thrills when I was here was the fact that at the suggestion of one of the faculty members in the International Relations Department, students came together and produced a journal. The journal was called Millennium, a Journal of International Studies, and it was, to my mind, a great honor that an article that I had written was published in the very first issue of Millennium. I never thought then But it turned out that when I came back as a graduate student, I had the opportunity to serve as the editor-in-chief of Millennium. The journal, as far as I know, 45 years on, is still going very strong. That journal did, by the way, inspire probably the most obnoxious letter that I've ever written to anyone. In the 90s, before Millennium became a more widely used term than it did at the turn of the century, I received a letter through the post advertising a new hotel which had opened in downtown New York in the Wall Street area. The hotel was called Millennium, and I couldn't help but write to the chairman of the company that owned the hotel that I was absolutely thrilled for two reasons. First, I thought downtown New York needed a good hotel, but second, I was thrilled that they had chosen the name Millennium, because I had had this opportunity to edit a journal named Millennium, and that in that role I had learned a great deal about a great many things. One of the things that I had learned was that there were two N's in Millennium. You see, the letter that came to me with this hotel had spelled it with just one N, and I could almost hear the silence at the other end of the letter. I'm sure the chairman called in people and hoping to hear that maybe my spelling was an English spelling or British spelling rather than the American way of spelling things. But I did get a letter back from the chairman, and he wrote to me to say that actually, as I possibly could appreciate, they had intentionally misspelled the word Millennium, because it was much easier to get a trademark for a name with an unusual spelling. And I thought, right, why didn't you spell hotel, H-O-T-L-E, then?
How was your experience studying and working with the faculty at LSE?
Yes, I mean, like many LSE students before and after me, I experienced something of an intellectual epiphany here at the school, and I soon stopped paying attention to the buildings, the unimpressive buildings in some respects, and concentrated instead on the faculty, the intellectual giants in their field who taught me. The philosophers Sir Karl Popper and Michael Oakeshott, political theorists Ralph Miliband and the Letwins. I was in the International Relations Department founder Charles Manning's last class and Dame Rosalind Higgins' first class at the school. And my supervisor, the late Fred Northage, was like a surrogate father to me during my time at the LSE.
Did this influence you in coming back and studying more?
It very much, it was a question of the opportunity to study in particular with Professor Northage, and at his suggestion, someone from the law department as well, that brought me back to the LSE. Well, that there were two things that brought me back to the LSE. You see, there was this magical day when I was an undergraduate minding my own business in the library. The library at the LSE then was housed in the old building. And it was a romantically twisty, turny affair with half-hidden rooms. It was kind of Hogwarts-like. And there I was, as I say, minding my own business, trying to study when I was distracted by a very attractive LSE student, who is now my wife. I met Rita that Tuesday. She moved in with me that Friday, and we've been living together for nearly 45 years since. So I used to tell my LSE students that when they went to the library, they should look to the left and look to the right, because you never know.
And so you went on to actually teach here.
Well, I left the LSE, completed a Juris Doctor degree at Columbia Law School in the United States. I guess I was a slow learner. It took three universities, really, to get me equipped to for the real world, but I actually spent more time at the LSE than either of the other two. I then practiced law, first on Wall Street and later in, here in London in the city. And I practiced law until I reached my law firm's then retirement age. I had been guest lecturing at the LSE before that, and a couple of faculty members suggested that on retirement from the firm, I should think about joining the faculty at the LSE. They told me that old was okay if you're a professor. So I came back to the LSE for a wonderful few years as a visiting professor in the on the law department faculty.
How did you find the change between being a student at LSE to suddenly being, well, not suddenly, but being a lecturer actually teaching the students and mentoring the students?
Well, it was a great thrill. One thing hadn't changed at the LSE, the quality of the student body was superb. It's my understanding that the LSE receives more application per place than any other university in the United Kingdom, and in that sense, it shouldn't surprise that it, the students who make it through the process are a particularly talented bunch. But in other ways, the LSE had changed quite a bit. I came in at the tail end of a three-year period that had really been, how should I put it, one of passion here at the LSE, and one where the students were calling for change and expecting change and believing themselves to be in a very revolutionary setting. I came to a back as a teacher to a student body that in many respects seemed to me to be more focused and career-oriented, but again, keen to make a positive difference in the world. But I couldn't help, because of that experience as a student, and it was passionate, to say to my students, by way of apology, that if they raised their hand to ask a question and I ducked under the desk in front of me, that was because very often when I was a student, if a hand went up, it had an egg in it, and if you were in the front of the room, you were a target.
And how did you end up becoming a governor?
Well, a huge privilege to be a governor of the school, particularly at such an exciting time as this one, when so much the school has such ambition and so much activity and direction in order to realize on that ambition. I had the privilege first of serving as chair of the LSE Alumni Network, the Global Alumni Network. And in that role, I had been invited to the meetings of the Court of Governors on occasion to report on alumni activities. I'm not sure, you'd have to ask the selection committee whether it was that or other considerations that featured in their decision to invite me to be a governor, but I know I only had to think about whether or not to accept it for a nanosecond, and it's been, someone once said, you're only good as the company you keep, and I feel awfully good because I keep some great company among the other governors.
In your position as governor, but also as having a long experience of being at LSE, both as a student and then again as an educator, what do you think is the future of the school? Where do you think the school's going?
You know, I was possibly in the last cohort to benefit from the teaching of Sir Karl Popper, and he certainly stressed, and it seemed wise counsel then and since, that where people are involved, it was dangerous to try to predict a future. That things, he particularly in his more political philosophy writings criticized those who